The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina. Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only "The Bombers Are Screwed, the Dynasty's Over" podcast.
We just had like a 15-minute preamble. You kept it under your hat the whole time. Kudos to you, Mr. Gasson.
I do that to you sometimes. And you, there was a time when you say, if I don't really tell you where we're going with this, you tend to think I have something coming your way, but I didn't actually this time.
That's fair.
Obviously, that is not true, but of course, I'm Joel Gasson with John Fraser as usual. That is probably true. You were listening to the internet's only Rider-related podcast where we talk about how the Bombers are screwed. Because, of course, the Riders' first preseason game came and went. And as far as preseason games go, I would say that was a game where the score was actually flattering to the team that lost, which maybe doesn't happen all that often. A late garbage time touchdown, but obviously none of that really matters. But if you're a Rider fan, still encouraging that they controlled the Bombers, I would say, pretty much that entire game.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance. I wasn't streaming it. I was out fishing, and I was listening to, and we'll get into more into Dave and Luke, but my goodness, is Dave Thomas ever good at play-by-play? And I mean, I know I'd already said that, but it's like, it's nice getting the texts from people being like, hey, you are right, Dave's actually pretty good, despite the fact that, you know, he's lowered himself and worked with you a couple of times. So, I think in terms of preseason, that first week, especially in the 9-team league, that is like the ultimate chaos game.
Yeah.
Like, the opening is like, you know, that's just a bunch of guys getting their game-worn jerseys to hang in their offices when they're financial advisors in 3 weeks. Or insurance salesmen.
Or if you're the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, of course, trying to figure out who actually is your best quarterback.
I mean,
and if that game was any indication, you better hope Bad Zach doesn't show up too much this year.
that's fair. Or they just let Strevler, you know, run the single wing.
He could still do that. He had some decent runs, but nothing else looked all that great. So,
which is amazing, because the guy's been in the NFL for so long. You'd think you spent that much time in the NFL, you'd learn how to throw a damn ball or make a read.
Yeah, but I mean, when you practice basically just for 3 years, sometimes you forget how to play a game.
That is fair.
Especially when the rules change significantly when you come back.
Also that.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that maybe to figure it out, he just needs to pull a Trevor Harris and go on a 23-hour road trip to figure himself out?
Maybe. He can go on a long journey because he ate a hot chili pepper.
After waxing his mouth so he could swallow it whole. There we go. We're exactly. 3 minutes in. We got a Simpsons reference. Yeah. That is check off the drinking game there.
Of course, we are referencing the story that you can find on 3downnation.com through Rob Vanstone, of course, the previous voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. that he did a story where apparently, heading into this year's training camp, so we're going to go back in time a little bit here, as we're allowed to do. Apparently, Trevor Harris, despite being the highest paid guy on the team, and AJ Ouellette, who is fairly well paid for an American running back, decided to make a 23-hour road trip together from Ohio, where they both are from, to Griffith Stadium in Saskatoon. Now, granted, of course, they don't have to pay for their flights. The team would fly them in, et cetera, but, I mean, that's not... This sounds absolutely terrible to me. I would not want to spend that much time in a car, but that's me.
Even
with you. No offense.
Not taken.
But apparently Ouellette's told Vanstone that we got to know each other, that's for sure. 23 hours talking football, talking God, talking family, a little bit of everything. I'm already good with Trev. I'll put him down as a lifelong best friend right now.
Aww.
So, I mean, I guess I understand from sort of a getting to know the guy's kind of perspective. If a guy essentially in the grand scheme of the continent lives down the street from you, you might as well drive 23 hours with them to work, I guess.
but what would have happened, like I know if you and I went on a road trip, mm-hmm. we would both just be like jamming out to like early 2000s, like nu metal. Like, yeah. We'd go, like you and I have done after a few curling games, after many, many amounts of booze. We just turn on YouTube and pull up, like, old school, like Limp Bizkit and Our Lady Peace and I Mother Earth and all those bands from our youth. Now, could you imagine if Ouellette gets in and Harris is like, hey, we're going to listen to nothing but Finnish speed metal, and he hates it? Like, what? I get it. I'm glad that they're lifelong buddies. You know, it's basically Planes, Trains, Automobiles, CFL edition. But, like, what would have happened if they just ended up hating each other during the trip?
Well, apparently they listen to some old school country, and they're both into that. So that was not a thing that worked out. But, yeah, I mean, it's certainly a risk if you don't really know a guy to do that for that long. So I hope they had a few conversations one way or the other before decided to hop into a car for 23 hours.
I'm assuming they did, but, like, I'm just thinking what a me and you road trip would look like. And I feel like we could almost monetize the live stream of it. We'd have to get a driver because we'd be sampling beers the whole time. But the other problem is on a long road trip like that is I have possibly the world's smallest bladder.
Yeah.
I'd be that guy that'd be like, especially after a couple beers, I'd be like, gas, we got to pull over again. And I feel like that's where the fight would start. So maybe it's just good that we just stick to, you know, visiting each other in the cities once in a while where bathrooms are aplenty.
Well, the only sidetrack to that, I guess, is we will have to find a mode of transportation to get us to eventually the Northern Ontario playdowns when we play together, when we enter, because we all qualify in one form or another.
That's we all will find a yes, because you and I have birthright. We're going to recruit Colin Hodgson, who lives there, and that makes Luke Saretsky.
He can just carry us, and yeah, we'll just have one import. We'll be good.
There we go. That is how we're going to do it. We're going to watch out Northern Ontario Provincials, because that is a wide, speaking of curling, that is wide open, minus like John Epping there these days. But we won't be showing up with those black brooms as this is getting... This is getting even more inside baseball, as on this podcast, we reference a line from another podcast. But, of course, Broomgate is way more popular than us.
Oh, God. It was. I don't know if it still was, but at one point, it was literally the number one podcast in Canada, ahead of that fucking idiot Joe Rogan.
Yes, and got a live sponsor read on the scene. I'm sitting down, like, watching Oilers and Canucks one night, and there it is. Not only the thing, but, like, you got Chris Cuthbert doing a promo for Broomgate, and I texted John Cullen. I'm like, holy shit, you've made it. Like,
yeah.
Like, all those silver medals, BC Provincials didn't make you famous, but my goodness, Broomgate is.
He's officially too large to now appear in our podcast. We'll put it that way.
In fairness, I feel like I could sad puppy dog eyes have been doing it.
Oh, he probably would, but I'm just saying, in theory, in principle, John Cullen is now way too big to appear on this podcast.
I mean, so is Colin Hodgson.
He's retired now, though, so I mean,
that's fair. So he's allowed to come on. Hell, I would even argue some days, Gas, that John Hodge is too big to come on this podcast that's like true. He has before.
In terms of personality and popularity, not size.
Oh, that's
just to be clear.
That's fair. Unless he's wearing that stupid hat he wore during COVID, then it brings him down to our level. Because that was terrible.
Yeah,
I don't care the excuses. I don't care if Hodge hears this. I've texted him directly about it. You know, I believe that's fair. I believe it was also shortly after he was a proxy for Michael Ball's threats of litigation against me that I did make a hat joke. So not only did he have to put up with Michael Ball, you know, sending him a message to send me, he then had to put up with me then poking him back about his terrible hat. I think we could pull off a 23-hour road trip, Gasson.
I mean, we would survive. We'd get through it. I mean, considering how much you'd have to pee, we probably wouldn't get very far. But
no, that's... I think we would, but I think the key would be finding another driver. The key is being able to just chill, have a couple beers, end up wherever our destination is. Because I feel like there is going to be one day that you and I are going to drive down to Boise State, Idaho together.
Maybe.
There's not exactly a lot of flights from Regina to Boise. And we'll have way too smart. Speaking of guys way too smart who've been on this podcast, I'll have Dan Plaster with us. So there we go.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole other road trip of FCS schools that are all very close to each other that I know Dan and I have talked about potentially making. Like Idaho and Montana aren't that far apart in terms of their games, so... Yeah,
Cody Jansen's in Montana right now. I can ask him how that went.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think he drove down there with his wife. So,
well, the Grizz aren't playing right now, so that's too bad.
That is really too bad. And they have like maybe the nicest, one of the nicest stadiums in all of college sports.
Absolutely.
Beauty.
One of the nicest stadiums in the CFL was busy this past Monday. As the Riders played their first preseason game of the year. Fun little fact about that game. It was literally the earliest the Riders have ever played a home game in their 114-year whatever history. As wow. of May 20th. So apparently starting the year early works for them because they won. Not that that matters, but we will get into that game and a whole lot more. But as usual, John, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company, what is in the glass this week?
After months, literal months of begging to let me do a taste test video a la the dumpster dog like I did for the Saskatchewan Rush, I finally bit the bullet and went out and paid money for the 9 Mile Saskatoon Berries beer. It is surprisingly purple. And I can tell you my first, I was going to do a live review on this, but then beers are sitting in front of me while we're bullshitting and I just can't not crack it. So one of my favorite beers of all time is the Lake of the Woods Blueberry Ale, which comes with the downside of being an 8% beer. This has just that hint of berry flavor. It's 4%. And I can see myself getting dragged out of Cairns Field after doing the 9-inning, 9 dogs, 9 beers challenge to these beers. They're that good. I think I could pull it off. But yeah, I know they're up here in Saskatoon. I found mine at Sobeys Liquor. A little hard to find as they've been very popular, but highly crushable and surprisingly purple. I thought with the amount of, like, you'd think there'd be a more overwhelming berry taste with the amount of purple in it, now that purple's a flavor. But no, it's subtle. It's crushable. It is, like, it's one of those beers that I think I could go have Lacey try, and she wouldn't tell me that it tastes like the Body Shop like she does so many craft beers I give her.
Mm-hmm. For me, I have, I guess, in a strange twist, but not so strange twist, the unofficial official beer of the podcast, which I believe is also the official craft beer of the Regina Red Sox.
Oh,
be the Pile
yes.
of Bones White IPA. Last year, I know they made a bunch of special labels for the Red Sox for their games for their white IPA. So that was kind of cool. Of course, WCBL season just around the corner. Get out and support the local team at the park. Always a good time there.
And if you're in Moose Jaw, get them to change that terrible logo. I don't care. Some people are like, oh, you're just mad because the Warriors beat the Blades. No, I'm mad because that is the worst logo I've seen in any sport ever. And, like, I watch some obscure shit. Like, out of any, like, current sports logo, I get it. Thanks to the Twitter followers for pointing out the Red Sox once had a literal crusty sock logo as it was standing up on its own, as they've been known to do. But, yeah. The Miller Express, your logo's absolute dog shit. You're going to hear this. You need to Google. I don't care if you're like our one listener in Japan. You need to get on the Google box and look at this logo. It looks like it's from a defunct 80s tech company that was bought out by Microsoft when they needed their Express printers. I've never seen a worse logo in my life. And even the other day, JB Campbell on the Sportsnet, get a little shout out. Okotoks, that's a nice hat. Medicine hat, that's a nice hat. You could tell Jamie wanted to say, this thing's a piece of shit, but instead he just forgot what the hat was about. I could tell, tip of his tongue, Jamie Campbell, one of the nicest guys in Canadian sports media, even got so thrown off by your horseshit logo that he didn't say anything about it. Go Berries! Go to the games, Moose Jaw, and get them to change the logo, because it is terrible. I never thought we'd find a way to get to that on the podcast, and holy fuck am I happy we did.
Yeah, I did not anticipate us going there tonight, and I did not anticipate you going that far off on it either, quite frankly.
It's so bad! Like, everybody thinks I'm just, like, joking and trolling on social media. I'm not! I'm fired up how bad that logo was. I used to feel the same way. I made the same jokes back when I covered the WCBL, when the Saskatoon team had the Yellow Jackets, which was still a better logo than the Moose Jaw Miller Express. And the XMX on the hat? What are you, a motocross team? Fucking defunct paper companies.
You know what really grinds my gears?
Shitty logos, Gasson. Oh, okay, man. Greg. Could you imagine if we had Greg from Piffles on this week?
Can he get that angry, though?
I've seen it.
I mean, in an actual public setting. Like, I know Greg does get angry at things, and he loves to argue with people online. But in this sort of setting, would he actually get that angry? I don't know.
this logo was that bad, I think he would. Okay, there we go. Let's get this back on the rails.
Yeah, now that John feels a little better, I guess we can talk about his dynasty of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers being over. Thanks to
coming to an end. Thanks to the preseason
according
loss.
According to the CFL stats package that was emailed out after the game, according to their 1918 loss. That's what it says on the very first page when you open the PDF. The final score was actually 25-12. So I don't know how we're going into year two of genius and this is still happening.
And I might get angry twice this episode. How is it so hard?
I don't know.
You literally, in the building, you're getting up-to-date stats. The up-to-date stats are being kept by people by the CFL, right? Yes.
It's important to note when we brag on the stats, I know there's four or five people at the end of the press box that have been doing the stats and Rider games for years. I don't know if any of them listen. I know they are all still doing their jobs correctly. It is something in the back end at head office that is completely broken and has been broken for well over a year now.
Well, and the crazy thing is you're with Genius, and I can tell you there's a lot of things the National Lacrosse League does not do right from working for the National Lacrosse League for a good chunk of my adult life. One of them is they partnered up with Champion Data, and I can get up to the second NLL stats basically anywhere on a back end site. How the hell are you the CFL and you can't do that?
I don't know.
Everywhere else, you used to be
able to get that in the CFL until a year ago.
Right. And then they went to Genius, which is looking like, even if you're going through it right now, okay, before we get into the discussion about the game, we were double checking some things. I think one of our general thoughts, as we will get into, is Shea Patterson looked good. Yep. So, according to the game tracker, and anybody that watched, listened, or happens to look, Shea Patterson was apparently 3-for-3. If you go to the play-by-play tab, the very same spot, Shea Patterson did in fact throw an incompletion. So this is starting to feel like this preseason game, in terms of us breaking it down, feels like the old line from Whose Line Is It Anyway? The points are made up and nothing matters. Did Winnipeg actually lose the game? Or is this just a conspiracy to make the Riders feel better about their team going into the season?
I was there. They lost. I was there. I watched it happen. They lost.
Shh, Joel, I'm grasping at straws here. Even though it is just the chaos week of the preseason, it's just, and I guess it's fitting that you have chaos that, none of these stats are accurate. You literally have to go off the eyeball and the ear test, which, for us, we can joke about it. We can be a little fired up. If you're a player trying to, maybe you're one of these guys that's getting released, and you're trying to make a go of it in the UFL, the Arena Football League, or someplace else, you're going to want accurate stats as your resume. It's one thing to not have accurate stats for the stories, right? Again, we can all make the Who's Line joke, but holy shit. Get it right, CFL. And that's the annoying thing. Like you said, you have people in the building doing the stats.
Yeah.
And it's just they take it into the interwebs and Genius Sports, as it sits there with a couple water wings on to eat a bowl of soup, whoever's working Genius Sports there, and it just gets convoluted and everything gets wrong. How do you take correct information and make it wrong? What if their spreadsheet's broken?
Were you playing with it?
I might have been. I didn't get my media access last year to the back end.
Yeah. I don't know. It's possible, I suppose.
More inside baseball, but... Yeah, it's a joke, and it's a bad look for the league. I get it; it's the preseason, but it's a shitty look for everybody. Than any other league, you can get correct stats basically as the game happens. You had a year, you had your ups and downs with your new partner, but you had an offseason to figure this out, and it's embarrassing that nobody figured this out.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offering, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Assisted customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yeah. So yeah, apparently Shea Patterson had one of the greatest games in the history of football. And
yes.
But in all honesty, like, I think to me, out of the actual like football side of that game, that may have been the most interesting thing to come out of it from a Rider perspective. Because I'll be honest, coming into this camp, you know, Mason Fine was probably in the driver's seat to be the backup quarterback.
Yep.
It's probably still technically his to lose because he didn't really get much of his chance to show it. He came in, did a few handoffs, and left. Apparently, he was a little dinged up, so not really sure what exactly, if that happened during the game or before the game or whatnot. But they got him in there, got him out, and presumably we will see him a bunch more against Edmonton on Saturday. Otherwise, they may have made up their mind on him. And so I was like, okay, something's got to give here. Obviously, Antonio Pipkin's going to be their short yardage guy. That just makes sense. It's what he's always done. It's what he's quite good at. So that leaves Jack Cohn and Shea Patterson to kind of battle it out as the guys to be sort of the third string slash practice roster guy. They keep around just in case sort of thing. And then Shea Patterson goes out and has easily his best game as a member of the Green and White. And you're left wondering, is there suddenly a competition for the number two spot behind Trevor Harris? And this is not, obviously, we all believe in Trevor Harris. He's coming back from what, in terms of the grand scheme of injuries, is a fairly straightforward recovery. You know, it's like, okay, yep, bone strong enough, go at it. This isn't a ligament thing. This isn't an ankle thing. This isn't an Achilles thing. This isn't, you know, he didn't tear an ACL, and where you're more likely to pop the other ACL in the coming years because you popped the other one. It's nothing like that. This is just straight up, you broke your leg. Okay, everything looks good now. Get back out there. So, I mean, there's obviously still, you know, sort of a rebound from that. But by all accounts, he probably should be fine. And we think he'll be fine. But no matter what, you're in the CFL and pretty much in professional football now. You need two quarterbacks to get through a season. So more than ever now, it's important that you know your number two can go out there and win you a football game if you need to. Well, and I think we'll see kind of what we see this Saturday. It's starting to look like maybe Shea Patterson can do a better job of that than Mason Fine.
Well, and we know what Mason Fine is. That's why even you and I were so I get it. You probably weren't holding on to Jake Dalagala. He was going someplace else that may give him a better crack at starting. And then he went to BC, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he goes to BC behind VA, who's one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I get it. He wants an opportunity to show he can do well. Now, Mason Fine, you got to remember, Mason Fine was so bad last year that they went to Jake Dalagala, who was the third stringer at the time. Like, Mason Fine is not even fine at playing football. Like, you know what you have from him. I like Shea Patterson balling out because he knows that job is there. Mm-hmm. And he's got an opportunity to go take it, right? The guy's got all the potential. He was a guy I know you were really high on coming out of college from, you know, you watching, you being a college football degenerate.
I honestly, after his college career, and like, I didn't think he was that great.
Oh.
I was unsure of whether he would make the jump. He still might not, who knows. But, I mean, he didn't exactly light the world on fire in Michigan, so.
No, you're absolutely correct. So, sorry, I thought I recalled you being high on him at some point. So that's my bad. But he's has an opportunity to go out and get the job. I especially with a new regime coming in. Mm-hmm. There's no guarantees for Mason Fine's job. I don't think Mason Fine is one of those guys that you're going to kick yourself a little bit if you let him go. I thought Dalagala might have been that guy a little bit. Maybe if you prove someplace else, but again, because your cap structure, you had to let him go. But Patterson looked great. Again, I didn't watch. I listened. Sounded like he was making the right throws. Luke and Dave had all sorts of good things to say. Justin Dunk had good things to say about Shea Patterson. So nice to see a guy stepping up. And that's what you're looking for, especially in these early preseason games, is who is going to do the thing? Whose name do you hear in association with doing good things, right? And for me, myself, listening to the game, I always judge, and A, Dave and Luke did a great job of the feeling excitement whenever both teams are doing something. So it catches your ear, you know, okay, I should stop focusing on fishing. I'm going to listen to what just happened kind of thing. So they did a great job of that from the broadcast side, but Ajou.
Yes.
Never trust a man with two first names. And what are you guys calling Keyshawn Johnson?
His name is Keyshawn, not that Keyshawn Johnson. Because, of course, there is, you know, veteran, well, very well-known NFLer Keyshawn Johnson. But this is not that Keyshawn Johnson. It's spelled differently. It's K-E-E-S, Sean, from there. So.
Right. See, it's funny because I thought, I just when you first hear that name, and again, we've seen lots of memes and stuff talking about how, you know, when you're growing up, you find a random college receiver that you kind of cling on. I remember Keyshawn Johnson being in like some of the earlier Madden games I've played and being really good. So I was like, are you telling me that they're given like a 38? Like, I know they brought Milt Stegall out for a day at rookie camp at 53. I'm like, Keyshawn Johnson's probably like 46 right now. I'm like, come on. And then I think even Mullinder or Dave made the same comment that it's like, no, it's not that Keyshawn Johnson. Don't worry, folks.
Keyshawn Johnson is 51, by the way.
Oh!
Yeah.
About this, almost the same age. So, yeah, he would have been a random player I would have had on Madden a bunch.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Keyshawn Johnson looked good. As you look good. And he particularly stood out to me, especially early on. I know they're going to go probably with three, maybe even four Canadian receivers at times. And it's going to be important to have depth there. So he's going to be a guy that is going to have a chance to make the roster and make an impact. And you don't see it that often from guys in like the sixth, seventh round of the CFL draft, but there's something with this kid for sure. He may be a little green in some ways. Obviously we don't have like access to the complete film. We don't really see them the way the coaches do in terms of like how exactly well they run routes and all that sort of stuff. But the guy's definitely a presence out there. Like, he is not a small man. He is able to get up and grab the football, as we saw on the touchdown grab. So there's something there with this kid, and it'll be interesting to see if he develops into a guy who may become sort of the surprise pick for this team out of this draft, as, you know, often the sixth, seventh round guys are, you know, they're the guys that come in for camp. Maybe they stick around for a year in the practice roster and then they're gone, generally speaking, right?
Yeah, certainly. And a guy like that, you know, we were talking about how the Riders have done really well with some of their early Canadian picks in the Jeremy O'Day era. So maybe it's time that, you know, they went out and found somebody from the sixth, seventh round. So again, he comes with the clout. I mean, he played for Clemson. He played for USF. Like, he's played for some elite level programs. So I think this could end up being a massive steal here for Saskatchewan, and finally a depth pick. But again, that comes down to, can you do it again this Saturday? And for the record too, if he does it again this Saturday, somebody get that kid a real number. 75 is not yes. a wide receiver number, okay? Yes.
Normally, if you were watching training camp, if there is pretty much anybody wearing a number in the 70s, not much is generally expected of them.
No, not at all. Like, I mean, he's coming. He probably slipped because he was a little, he was injured when he went to South Florida. And then had to end up playing at a community college, right? So he's definitely like a bit of a deep reach, but I think he's got the talent in the world. He's just a little injury plagued in his young career, and that's probably why he came up number 75. So hopefully he plays well again against Edmonton in this really, really bizarre preseason schedule for Saskatchewan, and just get him a real, even get him like a cool like 71. There's just something about 75. That you see that and you're like, that ain't a receiver number.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that obviously really stood out in this game from the Rider perspective, and it's more so maybe an indictment on the Bomber depth than anything, was the fact that the Riders were able to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sacks in that game. As I look,
I feel
through
like it
the
was
stats,
still more.
That's how many are attributed to players on defense on the stats. So
now again, the stats are all made up, like, but yeah. Like, I feel like it was a, even if it, maybe it wasn't more sacks, but it was just constant pressure against that Bombers offensive line that, you know, I can't even see, like, looking through this, I was going to try to make the argument that, well, you know, this guy aren't really expected to play much this year, especially as the game went on. But the roster lineup is so broken that I can't even do that.
Yeah, and like in fairness, it was none of the Bombers starters. Like they brought all their twos and threes, but I think along the offensive line, that leaves you maybe a little worried about your depth when they get beaten that badly by a few ones and some twos from your opponent. Well,
allegedly Stanley Bryant played.
Oh, did he? Oh.
Allegedly, I don't know because there's
he's kind of been not as good the last couple of years. So,
but I mean, there's also like large inactive lists on the website for guys that I know played. So I don't know if Bryant was there and didn't dress, or maybe only played a series. Like, same with Kolakowski, like he's expected to do it. Like, I just the website's so freaking broken that again. I wish. Oh, and everybody on Winnipeg is listed not as an offensive lineman, but as an OT. So I have no idea what's going on. I wish I could make some observation, but I can't, because unless I would have sat there and listened to the entire thing, which I did listen to a vast majority of it. But again, nobody's talking about, maybe if I would have listened to CJOB, they would have been talking a little bit about, you know, the offensive line play a little bit more. But yeah, but that's the way Winnipeg's going to be built this year. Yep.
They're top heavy, and if things start to go downhill, it might spiral quickly for them.
Well, you're already looking. Big Hill's on the 6-game injured list. I forget who else they put. Yeah, they put Cameron Lawson on the 6-game injured list today, and it's starting to look a little bit like, I hate to say it, and this is not me trying to reverse Fraser curse him, but this is like a barely finish above 500 and sneak into the playoffs where Zach Collaros throws 6 interceptions as the 3 seed.
Mm-hmm. But of course, from a Rider perspective, that's still encouraging. Just because they weren't great in the pass rush last year. So clearly under Corey Mace, that's something that they're doing some things differently, and they're figuring that out. And they got some, you know, they got some big plays. They got a few interceptions as well, though a couple of them were some of the easiest interceptions you might ever see.
yeah. There were some real bad decisions from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm. So again, we still have a lot of questions though about where this team is headed, because if you go into a preseason game, there isn't really a, you know, the Riders aren't going to really show much. The Bombers aren't going to show much. It's going to be very vanilla. It's going to be pretty straightforward. It's not necessarily you're going to learn a lot about their philosophy or sort of the way they approach the game or how they intend to play the game, other than I will say their tackling was a lot better than any time we've seen over the last couple of years. So that was definitely a thing that was encouraging. But otherwise, we're still going to have to wait to the regular season to see what this team is actually about and if it'll work. But one thing we do know they still have to work on is going to be penalties.
Yes.
Both teams, quite frankly, because the Bombers had, according to the stats, at least 9 for 117. The Riders had 9 for 85. I know Corey Mace was asked about it after the game, and he basically said, yeah, we got to be better. He didn't beat around the bush. He was, you know, understandably still a little peeved about that, because he said they worked on it in camp, and now they're just going to keep working on it, which was, of course, you know, which is, of course, a very different approach than what we had seen from this previous regime in terms of the, you know, following up and making sure the players are accountable for their actions.
Hey, let's all go bowling. I feel like every time we talk about Craig Dickinson, we just got to start talking like you think a snowboard instructor would talk, like just high as a kite. Like, just, yeah, man, it's all good. They'll figure it out. Total sidebar, as I was closing tabs here and looking stuff up. So, you know, when you search a player on Google, I had searched Ajou, which is why I sounded like I knew what the hell I was talking about for a minute. Yeah. Other searches, it says people also search for, from Ajou's Google, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Demon Clowney, Storm Duck, and Steel Chambers. So, obviously, the man is on a few people's all-names team, but it is good to see accountability and that culture change and everything. And even like, I think it was a billboard I saw talking about the new culture of this team being family. And it was a quote from head coach Corey Mace. Even little things like, did you notice he had his little girl with him in the dressing room after the game?
Yep.
Like, it's just little things like that. You can kind of see the culture that Corey Mace is building, and it's going to be one of accountability. Corey Mace has already struck me as, based on his comments he said about, you know, penalties, things like that, we need to get better. He's not going to be the rip your face off, rip your throat out kind of coach. He's going to be the kind of coach that you're afraid to disappoint.
Yeah.
Like, I'm starting to get that vibe from him a little bit, and that's good, because I think what has plagued this team more than anything has not been talent. I think they've had the talent the past couple of years. It's been leadership and just letting that 18-wheeler plummet off the cliff back-to-back years.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and you know, we saw it in camp. There were some guys who had to run around a little bit, but Mace was there talking to him the whole time, and things were cool at the end. And, I mean, he's, you know, not just the billboard, he's all over social media, too. My Facebook is just filled with ads every day featuring him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, they're definitely going all in to get people in the stadium this year. It's like, it's funny. It's like everything from, and I'm going to laugh, like, it's everything from hiring Corey Mace to bringing in Dave Thomas. It's like, no, we are not what we used to be. We are not the surfboard stoner, you know, head coach. We are not whatever our football broadcast was. We are the Riders. And I think it's paying off, because you said, you know, even on kind of a meh day on the Monday of a long weekend where a lot of people are out of town, you said it was actually pretty well attended.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was hard. It wasn't exactly, you know, blow off the doors attendance-wise or anything, but I came into the game certainly expecting the worst. I thought, okay, the weather's not great. It's a very early in the year preseason game. It's a holiday Monday. Yeah, like, everything added up to this place being empty, and it was hardly, I think it was hardly full by any stretch of the imagination. But I'd say there was maybe 17 to 20 there, which was higher probably than I was expecting.
I
think there is a certain curiosity about what this is going to be and how this is going to work out. And it's funny now that we have an entire month until they actually play their home opener, which is wild. So they play a couple of games in Edmonton, and there's another road game in there as well. And there's a part of me that thinks that might work in their favor.
Yes.
Because not only now they have a month still to sell home opener tickets, and I don't even, they don't necessarily have, I don't even think it matters what the record is after two games. People want to see, will want to see that this team is different before they do anything. If they watch those two games to open the regular season, and they see a team that is clearly accountable for their actions, that is working hard, can tackle defenders, is going to be worth watching, then I think that'll greatly help ticket sales for the home opener.
This province wants a team that gives a shit.
Yeah.
This team has not looked like they've given a shit since outside of maybe the Labor Day game last year. Right? Like, I think that's what people in Saskatchewan and generally fans in the CFL want. You want a team that plays like they give a shit. And early reviews from, I haven't been to camp because I get way too much, oh God, I hated doing this when I was a reporter. And it's not like I watch anyways or know what to watch for. I'll be the first to admit it. From the reviews from camp, for the reviews from this game, and hopefully that carries into the next game. But it looks like this is a group that has leadership that is going to give a shit.
Yeah. And I think that's important. I think that not only comes from the coaching staff, but it comes from the players too, who are going to want to back that up. And I think there's guys who have been brought in who will want to bring that up. And we kind of saw, like you talked about the family culture a little bit early on. When Frankie Hixon scored that touchdown that he got on the ground, he ran right out to the sidelines and gave that ball to Corey Mace.
Unreal.
Which, those, I mean, those, it's a preseason touchdown, but still, it's, here's your first touchdown as a head coach in the CFL.
That's unreal. Like that, and that speaks volumes to, you know, what Corey Mace has brought. And just like I've said before, like at the Kinsman dinner, being in the room with him, he's the kind of guy that makes you feel like you want to run through a wall. And again, it's way too early. I think the West is going to be an absolute clusterfuck this year.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there, I think Winnipeg's taking a step back. I think BC's, you know, probably taking a step up, being as they're hosting this year, but like, I think it's going to be an absolute mess, and having that kind of leadership and that kind of team building and everything reminds me a little bit of Chamberlain, but I definitely don't get the vibes that he's got the ego like Corey Chamberlain.
No.
Like you've been in scrums with him. You've had interviews. You've been on Zoom calls with him. I haven't, but it seems like the atmosphere he's building seems to be around those teams of the 2010s that everybody cared for each other, everybody gave a shit about each other, but without, you know, some of the idiosyncrasies of Corey Chamberlain, the person.
Yeah, there's definitely some very early Corey Chamberlain vibes there. But I don't foresee, if things go well, I don't foresee Corey Mace being the guy who, where ego starts to take over. I just don't see that, no.
No. Guy seems humble. Guy seems, and from all reviews everywhere he's been, that's the reviews you're getting from him. And again, neither of us are anointing these teams a Grey Cup contender, but in a 9-team league, anything can happen, unless you're the Toronto Argonauts this year, where everybody fled because of the toxic culture there.
Oh, no, Mike Pinball Clement said the culture's fine.
Oh, totally fine. That's totally why all your players left.